Blog Talk Radio.
And then I read the book again, and it said his mother brought him into Africa.
Uh-huh.
And shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that you speak out of the mouth of God. For that cometh forth from the mouth. And pray to be amplified version rather than made of this. That the God of divine liberation was what we read in your hearing. Talk about faith for those and family. The idea of the faith for the devil. For the evil one is valid idea. It's not a fantasy idea. It's not an idea that we have in our imagination. Whatever name we may be called by.
Roman culture. Just
information for you. And while some of these folks might have been managing, on the other hand, were riches and assassins. Because we learn something from all of our experiences. I wish I had somebody get a prison. Those sleepy and those dead. Now, while they were being exposed to cousin folks, they were exposed to a cultural and a religious philosophy that taught them that the universe was true, or that it was in two parts, and that is, that was one part. That was God. And the other car, that was God. And that over the kingdom of God, there was a God. This God was known as Angry Man, the God of God. And over the universal God, there was a God, and his name was Aramada. He was the God of life. It is said that it was from this example that the Hebrews derived the concept of the God of righteousness, who was Yahweh, and the God of darkness, was Satan. Because from this we get, or we become, the beneficiaries of this experience. Because from this experience, and from this experience, that we learn about faith, the devil, and the world. I know the faith we read, because I see him embodied in the character and personality of people that I'm in contact with every day. I know he is real. Satan is real. I see him on the street. I see him in the marketplace. I see him in the automobile. I see him in our circle of friendship. I see him manifest himself in the church, in the choir, on the deacon boat, on the trustee boat, on the apostle boat, in the missionary church. I see faith embodied in the people. I wish I had somebody get free. And so, one day in the week of Jesus, God had acknowledged as being his beloved son, in whom he was well pleased. Jesus departed and went to the wilderness, went to the loneliness, the isolated place, in the desert for first. For things, those prayer meetings. Oh, yes, he does. He goes to prayer meetings. He goes to rehearsal. He goes to preach meetings. He goes to prayer meetings. Sometimes he interferes with your prayer. Sometimes when you are praying, if you're not careful, you get into your thoughts. You'll be praying about one thing in your mind, you don't know.
fulfilling man's needs. We have our welfare program. We have our housing. We have our subsidies by the government in many, many forms. But we have found that you can have babies and have no welfare program. Have your house. Man doesn't live by bread alone. No. Wait a minute. I have another thing I want to propose. I have another proposition. If you don't go for the material approach, if you refuse to be a material disciple, what about being a mystical disciple? You don't get me. What about being a mystical disciple? Come on, Goldman. I want you to walk with me in the mask. Doing one of the great when the immigrants and migrants from all over are in Jerusalem in attendance to the feast. And I want to walk with me up there on that exalted bed that encompasses the temple. And those rows of walk with holy attack. And if you go up there, and jump down with all of the people from the Greek or Roman world. If you jump down, don't worry about it because the Thomas has already said that you're not going to hurt yourself. If you jump, then the angels of God will bear you up. Especially that's the foot of this stone. People are always claiming you as a mystical Messiah. If you jump back, Jesus said, I've known the same that behind us, your role is not to influence me. Your role is not to lead me. Your role is not to tempt me. Behind us. Jesus said, wait a minute, man. We don't go for either one of my propositions. I had a third one. Don't bring out negotiations. I got something else. All of that talk. All of that talk. If you die. even think of the Son of God. Now these are three traditional concepts. Of the role of the Messiah. Historically, these were three concepts. The material Messiah. The mystical Messiah. The political and military Messiah. But then, as you read the 53rd chapter of Isaiah, there is another concept of the Messiah, which is the suffering servant concept of the Messiah. The suffering servant. This is the road that Jesus chose. He turned down the other road. He turned down the other approach. He did not embrace the materialistic approach. He did not embrace the mystical approach. He did not embrace the political and militaristic approach. He rather embraced that suffering and servant concept. This is the road that Jesus chose. He knew this was a faithless road. He knew that this was the road that he would be honored in gratitude. He knew that this was the road where his friend and follower would turn their back to him. Where he knew that for a while they would acclaim and they would say he was safe. And he knew that they would go on. And they would proclaim him the king. They come into the name of the Lord. You don't hear me. They knew that he was, and he knew that he was Fred Gunn, who he was. You know, Fred Day. On the journey of the Lord. Sometimes, on earth, it's sometimes to praise. It's sometimes to praise his soul. Like one of the from the woodman. On, but stay out there for a while. Praise the Lord. No matter how good you are, and no matter how much good you do, and no matter how many people you help, eventually the praise will die down. Eventually the hallelujah will go stop. And so after they praise, after
a few days later. hands of the enemy. Oh, Lord. Oh, yeah. A few days later, brother. Oh, yeah. A few days later, that crowd that was in the hands of an angel judge. And I know that they have hope. A few days later. Oh, yeah. Oh,
and then in the next page, About the eagle,
it is not filled her neck in a peculiar way. It is that that eagle fills the nest in kind of a huge fashion to fit her own anatomy and that of her young. But facing there, the nest is rather crude and rough. But then as that nest graduates towards the finish, it is hard that material becomes finer and finer, finally soft and tawny, that top, so that the little eaglets can be comfortable in the nest. But when those eaglets have grown up and ought to be out scuffling for themselves, that parent eagle put them out of the nest, take them upon her back, fly out into the kingdom, and when they are unsuspecting, they dive from beneath them and leave them flopping their little wings, trying to steal off. It is said that she circles around above them and flops them while they struggle. She knows when they have become exhausted. She knows when they can't stay long any longer. When they are about to go down, dive beneath them and catch them on her back. I think God does us like that. God does us like that sometimes. I believe that sometimes we find ourselves in the comfortable nest of circumstances, luxury or security or more. We get so comfortable, we don't bother to struggle. We are satisfied with where we are. Then God, take us out. Allow some circumstances to develop and push out of our nest of truth. And then when we find ourselves, we're on our own feet. Well, have you felt like that sometimes? Sometimes in prayer, you reach out and it doesn't seem that he's there. That shows you go out of your head and turn to the right and to the left. You go back over your path, and it doesn't seem that he's there. Oh, he's there, all right. And he's everywhere. He's above us. He's looking down on us. But he's allowing us to find our own way. I don't believe you hear me tonight. And who we are a really fall. Let us when we are sin. I don't believe you hear me. But I'm about to say that, you know, preaching means nothing except desperate fighting out of a story. Unless you can make it relevant by life and faith. Now, question is God still doing it? That's what I want to ask you. Yes, he's still doing it. He stirred the nest in history when we came as slaves to this country. You don't hear me. I know it's rough, and I know it's sad. but just a little while. But no, you don't hear me tonight. Looking back, love, it's like it was a long time. Oh, Lord. Seems like the night was too long. God, but just a minute, in eternity. My great grandparents were saved. But oh, look, where her great grandson stands tonight. Oh, Lord, God has been trying to miss. Oh, Lord, in suffering, there is redemption. Oh, Lord, unfortunately, for us to be ourselves, we have to suffer. Unfortunately, for us to know ourselves, sometimes we have to suffer. Oh, Lord, and my great-grandparents and their parents, suffered vicariously for me and for you. You don't have me tonight. I see God turning to me. In labor, God said to me. You don't have me.
God continue to On the book and employing
service and different stuff. Because my name is in living in any community. When he started talking about worship, it is where you had the ability to worship. When he talked about going to school, where quality education was being taught, it was then that the passion got in motion. And excuse me for my personal opinion, I believe that there were more people involved than just the assassin himself. This is when Jesus got in trouble. When he challenged the power structure of his day. Conspiracy began. And then arrest, and then fire. First preliminary hearing was before Ananias. Ananias seems to have been a retired high priest. And after a preliminary hearing before him, he was taken off with the Alpha, the presiding high priest at the time. The Alpha was primarily concerned in the hearing, that is, about the doctrine that Jesus taught. You know, some people think that Jesus left the Jewish church, but he never left that. He lived and died in truth. It was his ideals and his principles and his religious philosophy that led to the Christian movement. But he himself never left the Jewish church. Listen, if you please. And there was enough religious elasticity within the confounds of Judaism, if you understand, to accommodate any religious philosophy, that of the Sadducees, that of the Pharisees, that of the Herodians, that of the Essenes, that of the Zealots. But now these people apparently did not hold to the heart of things. Jesus talked about the hypocrisy of the Pharisees. He talked about the injustice of the Sadducees. He talked about the unrighteousness of the so-called religious people of his day. This kind of shit for us. You don't hear what I'm talking about. Because the next hearing after the Caiaphas was before us. Not about any religious philosophy. Not about any doctrine. He had no interest in that kind of thing. He himself was a Roman. And he was there to represent the Roman state. And what he was concerned about was prophecy. That involved himself in any kind of conspiracy or treasonable act against Rome. What he was concerned about. And of course, when he upon investigation and interview and hearing found nothing of this nature, he was ready to effectuate a compromise with the Jews. He was ready to vacate it. He, of course, in this election, as you know, and the thought of when the Jews in this Gentile temple, this will defile them and render them unable to participate in the Passover.
Now think about that.
Isn't it peculiar and isn't it ironic that people are conspiring to kill you or get you killed? And what about these little ceremonies? If your efforts to help put the Son of God to death, if your efforts to put any godly man, any righteous man to death, or in any wise way, or try to hinder him, I think this is the greatest crime that anyone could be involved in. I don't need them to hear me. You remember that time in Little Cook? Worried about the ox and the eye. This Sunday Sabbath thing. In the table of evaluation, they had the ox of human dignity and human life. They didn't mind leaving a man in mind. But they felt religion bound at the outside. I don't believe you hear me tonight. During this hearing before Pilate said, are you a Jew? And are you the king of the Jews? Jesus said, how did you arrive at that conclusion? Did somebody tell you that? Or did you arrive at it in your own thinking? Pilate would have him know that I am Rome's representative. I am the governor. The power is in my hand to condemn you a second degree. But what Pilate didn't know, that he had no power, except it came from God. Listen to me, please. Jesus said, now, Pilate, so to speak, don't fret yourself about this kingdom. Don't fret yourself as to whether I'm involved in treason of destiny. Don't worry about the fact that I might want your place. My kingdom is not of this world. I don't believe you hear me. My kingdom is not of this world. The kingdom that I represent is transcendent to this world. Is beyond this world. The kingdom that I represent is qualitatively higher than this world. I'm not talking about how high it is in the sky, but in terms of qualitative meaning, my kingdom is not of this world. You don't hear me. I'm not interested in your royal seat. I'm not interested in your crown. I'm not interested, Pilate, in your throne room. I'm not interested in your military men or your army or your navy. I'm not interested in your implements of war. I'm not interested in the things, the corruption, or heredity, or intrigue, which bring them to power. I'm not interested in that kind of thing. My kingdom is not of the world. You don't hear me. My kingdom is not of the world. My kingdom racial boundaries or national boundaries. My kingdom has nothing to do with foreign policy. No, sir. My kingdom has nothing to do with employment or labor union. I wish somebody would pray with me tonight. My kingdom is supra-racial. My kingdom is super-national. My kingdom is super-class. My kingdom is above. My kingdom is above race. My kingdom is above frontier. My kingdom is above army. My kingdom is not all in the world. And in the world, worry about power, worry about money, worry about influence, worry about position. The kingdom of this world, that's what they worry about. But I represent a domain, a dominion. Beyond greed and corruption and all of these things. My kingdom is not of this world. My kingdom is beyond this world. In quality, in meaning, in spirit, in other words, my kingdom is a spiritual kingdom that deals with truth. You don't hear me. It deals with that qualitative concept that set men free, that redeemed men from their sins. My kingdom is the kind of that thing to suit. You understand me? That gives men relevance and awareness of their relevance with God. My kingdom, none of this. My kingdom deals with righteousness, deals with justice, deals with love, deals with brotherhood, deals with happiness. My kingdom deals with health. My kingdom is not of this world. And of course, Pilate, you really understood why. You understood the nature of the person that stands before you. You really understood that I've come to the point of the oneness of God. In fact, when you look at me, you're looking at God. I'm God for you. As far as you can stand to see, and as far as you can stand to comprehend, and you know who it is that stands before you. You wouldn't lie. Oh, no. You would not look down upon me as a male factor. Well, you know what you would do, Pilate? You understood why? Oh, Lord. You got up from your judgment seat. And you got me to find your stead. Oh, Lord. You fall. Oh, God, dear. You throw your arms on the floor. You get out. Yes, you could. You even prostrate yourself before me. Yes, you could. If you know who it is that stands before you, you stand up. living with us. We are slipping the narrow.
Thank you. In the book of Daniel, in the Apocrypha,
He had to say something about the emperor and those who had gone into a leisure with him. In other words, he called Rome Babylon. He couldn't admit Babylon because Babylon had been out of existence for centuries. He called the emperor the great friend. He called the heads of the state that had gone into coalition with the emperor. He called them beasts. He called history a scroll rolled up and sealed by seven seas. That nobody could break those seals. Up to that. I don't believe you read with me. He called the church a woman in travail and pain. Did you hear me? He called successive era through which they had to inevitably attack. He called these eras tossing. He called the question the man. He called the second. The black horse. He called the time, the tail horse. He called the fourth and last, the white horse. I don't think you're going to play with me that. Now, by the red horse, he meant that they would have to pass through an era of war and bloodshed. And in the wake of that era, a natural sequence would come. An era of starvation, pestilence, tribulation. And in the wake of that era, another natural sequence, an era of wholesale death, which he called the pale horse. But then he predicted for them victory. And ultimately conquest, which he called the white horse. And its rider was Jesus. And then practically, he described a long series of tribulation, trial, war, and misery. Such as the world has never seen. While mountains were moving, while hills were running, while men were falling upon hills and rocks to fall over, while the sea was boiling like a giant pot, and the clouds were rolling up like smoke, and the sky was cracking like glass. And the volcanoes were erupting. And out of this long process of misery and war, it seemed that a calm is ensued. And in the wake of this calm, he said, I saw a new heaven and a new earth coming down from God. In other words, all of this division, all of this war, but just before white man, an alien in attendance to the birth of a new earth, the birth of a new earth. And when a new earth is in the process of evolving, there's always misery, there's always war, there's always sorrow. And I look around upon the horizon of time and observe what's going on in this world. The misery, the war, the bloodshed that's going on in America, in Cuba, in Africa, in South Africa,
wonder if you can see what I'm talking about. He said, God, I saw a new heaven and a new life coming down from God out of heaven. For the old heaven and the old earth were passing away. You know, brothers and sisters, if we've got a new heaven, we've got to have a new earth. Or if we get a new earth, we've got to have a new heaven. You can't have a new earth and an old heaven. Because you see, our concepts and our ideas of heaven are influenced by the world that we live in. It influences not only our thinking, it influences our biology. So when we speak of heaven, we got to be nice and charged. We've got to talk about rivers, lakes, gates, streets, cities, trees, flowers. These are figures of speech. But how else could we except in earthen terms? And that if God gives us a new life, if God gives us a new order, we've got to have a new heaven. I don't give you bread, McGee. That's what John said when he saw this new heaven. He also had a new earth. I don't believe you praying with me. Then he said, there was no more sea. And to him, the sea represented that thing that separated him from his church, him from his members, him from his friends and loved ones. The Aegean Sea stood between him and everything that was important. But in this new world, there are no seas of separation from friends and forevermore. There was nothing to divide him or cut him off from all of those worldwide and important things that were vital to his development and to his appreciation. There was no more sea. And what was more, this new heaven and new earth came down through God. You know, I believe that the sociologists are doing a good job in helping us to bring about a better environment in which we live. I believe that the men of medicine are doing a great job in raising the health standards, in extending the lifespan or the life expectancy. I believe the honest politicians are doing a good job. I believe that the scientists and all of the people who are working for a better world are doing a good job. But if we will ever get a word of brotherhood, if we shall ever have a word of goodwill, a word of peace, I believe God is going to have something to do with it. But this man said the word that he saw, the new order that he saw, came down from God. And then he declared that this world was God's center, that God was among his people. And then he tells me here about an amazing thing, a kind of a world that's hard for us to conceive of. There were no more tears. But he said, God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes. It's pretty hard for me to conceive of a world without tears. But you see, the world I live in, so many things about it to make men cry. And to bring tears to the eyes of women as well. To bring tears to
Join me, bitch. Some good days, and then we'll have some bad days.
consideration tonight. And I'd like to look at Elijah as we have read from the text. We would like to look at him, first of all, during his good days. During Elijah's good days, he carried heaven's key in his pocket for 3 years and 6 months. He lifted a dead boy to life one day. These were some good days. Not only that, but he had a great victory on the cross. He had a white walk, little station beyond the Jordan where the heavenly limits met him and took him home. These were some good days. But now we want to look at Elijah down in the dump with the flu. Now, when you're down in the dump, really not anything hurting you. You were just don't feel good. I've heard that term all my life. But down in the dump, just a lazy feeling. You're not sick enough to go to the doctor, and you're not well enough to get up out of the bed. Just drown. We don't care, Elijah. After Elijah's victory and success, we're going to find him down in the dump. Some people have said that Elijah was very pessimistic, a negative man, but not really intentionally so. Elijah was a man who thought on the positive side. But sometimes when we mean well, we do our worst. One such woman was very pessimistic and negative. They asked her how did she feel that particular day. And she said, I feel good today. But I always feel the worst when I feel the best. Because I know how bad I'm going to feel when I get to feeling bad again. You know, a lot of people can feel good today, but they feel bad when they feel good. Because they're thinking about how bad they might feel on tomorrow. They're looking on the wrong side of life. A man should always look to the right side. I don't want to lose any of you, but I'm from Huntsville. I just told you that a few minutes ago, but we used to have to draw water. Now, some of y'all know what I'm talking about.
Yes, sir.
You young people might not know too much about a bucket and a well, but it was said that two buckets went to the well one day to get some water, and one of the buckets said, it breaks my heart to think that however soon we go away from the well, we always come back here. The other bucket laughed and said, I was congratulating myself on the fact that however empty we come to the well, we always go back to full. There are two sides to life. It behooves us as young people to look on both sides and always look to the right side. There was a man once who was convicted in all force because he was a discourager. He was always looking at the bad side. Many times they would be sent out on missions and he would predict that somebody would get back. You know, a discourager can hinder progress. And this man was convicted because he was a discourager. He refused to see anything hopeful. And this kind of person is always dangerous to progress. We have a lot of people like that in the church. Now, first of all, here we look
can eat lies. We can fact lies. We can imagine the days preceding this great test of old karma. These were some powerful and restless days. Then came the great day of contest and victory. And I'm sure Elijah had to put forth a lot of preparation before the great contest. I can think about Mr. Bradshaw. I can think about before the big football game, before the Super Bowl. You have to put forth extra preparation. And most teams, when they get ready for a big game, they really work out hard. So I'm sure Elijah put forth some special preparation just before my car. So he had a lot of teachers. I know his nerves were on the edge. And after the victory, it is said he ran before the chariot of Ahab from Karma to Jerrell, which is a distance about 17 miles. So now I won.
Thank you.
front of the tree. Sometimes you take things in your own hands. We look at how many check people today leave the check because they get angry with someone. Is that right? This is the reason we have so many lonely people. Because they have left the divine presence of God. Paul says, when difficulties come, be of good cheer. You see, when the blues hit you, you can't do nothing right. You can't look right. You can't walk right. You can't speak right. You can't talk right. You can't ride your car right. You can't do nothing right. Is that right? And he lied to himself that he had been a total failure. I hear him say, yeah, I'm no better than my father. They allowed Israel to drift into idolatry. Have you ever been like that? Have you ever felt that everything you seem to do is wrong? Have you ever been like that? Those old folks work for nobody. Flags on. Seems like the more you work, the less appreciation people show.
As I do. And then I look in the picture and said,
the people what I mean. And so I got all the picture Bibles, and I couldn't find one
looking like me.
Not even an angel. And I said, well, wait, though, I should speak to my people about a little two things. It seems to say that somewhere in the book he had seen it like lamb's wool.
Well, I know you don't know what I'm talking about.